KALW.
From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents. Context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
I'm from San Francisco and I live in Berkeley.
Oakland, 33rd and Telegraph.
I was born in Costa Rica.
Coming up, we'll explore the tensions between a homeless encampment and a Home Depot in East Oakland.
If you don't have those jobs, then we all wind up in the street making an excuse and feeling sorry, but I never see anyone come over and help me clean it up.
Then we'll hear from sports writer Marcus Thompson of The Athletic on what it was like to cover the Warriors last season in Oakland.
Steph grew up in Oracle. So did Clay, so did Draymond. Like, all their memories happened in Oracle, so it's special to them.
And we're heading to the Tenderloin for this week's audiograph.
I'm 60, almost 60 freaking 4 years old, and I'm still doing this because I love it.
Signature sounds from around the Bay Area. Cross Currents is coming up. The fate of a homeless encampment near a Home Depot in East Oakland was decided early Wednesday morning at an Oakland City Council meeting. Store representatives and employees say the encampment has caused problems with public health and crime. The council decided unanimously to temporarily close a street behind the hardware store, blocking off access to the encampment and effectively shutting it down. KLW's East Oakland reporter Janae Darden is here with me to talk about the impacts of that decision. Hey, Janae.
Hello, Hannah.
So, can you give us a little background on this conflict around the encampment?
Yeah, there's a lot of issues in this story, and it's really reflecting what's happening in Oakland. So the city, it doesn't have many big major stores. Walmart left a few years ago, and Home Depot is one of a few major stores in Oakland. The store is really close to Alameda, so it's not just Oakland residents shopping there. And there are smaller independent hardware stores in Oakland, but Home Depot is a big employer. They have about 240 workers. Mm-hmm. There used to be a Super Kmart where the Home Depot is now. Mm-hmm. Had the best 7-Up cake. I missed that 7-Up cake. And that really hurt shoppers when it closed around 2004. And one woman at the city council meeting from the public, she said that accommodating Home Depot sends a message to other stores who want to come to Oakland.
Uh-huh.
But the situation is also a reflection of the homeless crisis and the lack of affordable housing, which our homeless advocates are saying that's the bigger issue
right.
than shopping.
Mm-hmm. And have you seen this encampment?
Well, City Councilman Noel Gallo, he proposed a resolution. Mm-hmm. And so, Hannah, a couple of years ago, I rode with him to the Home Depot area during one of his weekend cleanups. And he and his volunteers, they go around the Fruitvale neighborhood every weekend and they clean. Mm-hmm. And the street he wants to close has a few RVs, but just all around Home Depot and other side streets are RVs and people living out of their cars. Some of the people I met, they're originally from Oakland,
mm-hmm.
you know, grew up in Oakland, and they became homeless. Some are battling drug addiction. It is dirty down there, not just from people that are unhoused, but illegal dumping. And customers, business owners, the few residents in that area, they've been complaining for a while, but the city, they haven't done much.
So how is this impacting Home Depot?
Well, Home Depot reps say the workers have been attacked when working outside in the back of the store.
Mm.
Some have said they've had guns pulled on them. The problems are also spilling over into the store's parking lot. There's
mm-hmm.
been reports of theft in the store and around the parking lot. Workers don't feel comfortable there. They've seen really gross stuff like human waste.
Mm.
And Home Depot is paying some money for this. They're paying 2 Oakland police cars to patrol the parking lot, and it's costing them $100 an hour per police car. And so they're hoping this will cut down on the theft.
And this crime is all coming from the homeless encampment?
You know, I'm not sure, Hannah. I've been to that Home Depot many times because I'm from that area. And before that encampment came, I was warned about shopping there
mm-hmm.
because people had been robbed in the lot. Day laborers who come there looking for construction projects, they were getting robbed because a lot of them have cash and they're paid in cash. Tools are expensive.
Right.
And so thieves rob customers and sell the tools on the black market. So there's been some problems there for a while. It's just gotten worse.
Mm.
A spokesperson for the store, her name is Margaret Smith, she said out of all of their 2,000 stores across the country that this store in Oakland suffers from some of the most malicious crimes and thefts.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Mm. So what was the tone of the city council meeting the other night?
The agenda was very long, as usual, for city council meetings, and they didn't even get to this decision until really late that night. So Councilman Guile proposed a resolution, and even though it was after midnight, he was real fired up before the vote, and he talked about how Home Depot has hired graduates of Oakland Public Schools to fill entry-level jobs,
mm-hmm.
and he called on the city council to do more.
So those are jobs that are being created that are open to neighbors. But if you don't have those jobs, then we all wind up in the street making an excuse and feeling sorry, but I never see anyone come over and help me clean it up or help me help any of the homeless directly to get them out of the setting that they are.
Okay, so what did members from the community say?
It was late, so there weren't a whole lot of people there because it was like way after midnight. Several people from the community did speak, including a rep from Home Depot. Of course, Home Depot supports this resolution. But a business owner named Michael Yu spoke, and his business is the only one on that part of the street that's going to be blocked off. And he said blocking off the street would create more problems for his business.
There's a side street, Bulmer, that's also blocked off. So once it's blocked off, we have no access. We believe like if there's more vehicle traffic around our business, it would deter crime. But if it's all closed off, it's like a sanctuary for crime.
So, Janae, ultimately the council voted against Yu's interest.
They did, and they voted unanimously to close 37th Avenue for 18 months. So this is a temporary closure.
Okay, so what happens now?
Well, Home Depot, they're going to pay for the fencing that would close the street, and the street's going to be a tow-away zone. And the assistant to the city administrator says they're going to give those living on the street ample time.
Ample time.
Quote, unquote, ample time to leave. Now, what's ample time? He didn't say explicitly.
We don't know.
Right.
So what'll happen to the people living on the streets?
So Guile says they will be moved to a lot that the city owns. And the assistant to the city administrator said during the city council meeting that those people, they will have to leave. They will not tow or take away their RVs. So they will have their RVs.
Okay.
And you know, Hannah, Home Depot has been making national news lately.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, politics, of course.
For sure.
So the chain's co-founder, billionaire Bernie Marcus, recently said he wants to support President Trump's reelection, which has called for a boycott around the country from people. And
yep.
I've seen some people in Oakland say online that they could care less if Home Depot closed.
Mm-hmm. All right. Thanks, Janae.
Thank you.
Janae Darden is KALW's East Oakland reporter. You can find her stories online at kalw.org. You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Hannah Baba. For the last 14 weeks, we've been covering the Golden State Warriors and the town where they played with our podcast, Bounce, the Warriors' last season in Oakland. It's the off-season now, but really there is no off-season. The team's young players are playing summer ball.
Now Evans, push off. Foul line jumper from the elbow is good. It gets the bounce.
Free agency and trades are still happening. Stephen Curry's selling golf outfits. That's Steph Curry. And Marcus Thompson is writing about basketball. He writes for the national outlet The Athletic, and in recent years, he wrote biographies of Stephen Curry and Kevin Durant. But before all that, Marcus grew up a Warriors fan in Oakland's Sobranti Park. KALW's Ben Trefney talked with Thompson at our East Bay Bureau in Old Oakland, just a block from the Dubs' former practice facility.
If I write anything about Oakland, they're like, oh, you're always killing us, and here's what we're doing for Oakland, and there's always this. They pretty much feel like they know what I'm going to say.
Is that the players or the management?
No, management.
Yeah.
Players are kind of with me on this.
Yeah.
They know what's up. Especially like Steph grew up in Oracle. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
So did Clay, so did Draymond, like all of their memories about growing into basketball, about learning how to become a man, happened at Oracle, so it's special to them. Like, you can feel it. You can hear it. Bob, it's special to Bob Myers. He went there as a kid. You know, he's the general manager, and, you know, he's got to say the company line, you know, but that's his arena. You know what I'm saying? We got a guy, Sam Amick, with The Athletic. I mean, he grew up in Pleasanton. Like, I grew up in Oakland, and I have a personal relationship with Oracle, but so does he. Like, his family bartered in the games, you know. Like, so there's a lot of people who are like, yo, this is my spot, and now it's gone. But by the time I got to write it, it was much more cognitive than it was, like, you know, I guess spiritual, so to speak. It wasn't like this outflowing from within. Yeah. It was me piecing together what I understand. But, like, I had already, like, it was already over to me. You know what I'm saying? It was already, like, a done deal.
Yeah, I understand.
And you kind of moved on. So I think I had to write, I think I wrote three of those things in the process of the season where, like, the editors wanted it and people wanted me to say something. But I'm already, like, you know, this is like going to revisit something that already died. You know what I'm saying? So that's why it wasn't the moment for me, like, in the same way, win a championship, where I'm writing it and I'm feeling what I'm writing. This was more, let me explain to y'all, right? Here's the explanation of why this matters.
I mean, it's going to be an interesting feeling, I'm sure, for you next year, that first game at Chase, to see them there. And then, because you live in Oakland now, because and then you're going to come back to Oakland to go home.
Oh, yeah.
Instead of going to Oracle and then
just be like covering the Giants, covering the 49ers, right? That's what it would be.
Except for the nostalgia.
Yeah, but that's already gone. Like, I was expecting to feel something in the last game. It wasn't. It's already gone.
There were a lot of feelings that last game.
Yeah, it was already gone. Like, I don't know. Maybe that's because I'm from Oakland and, you know, and this is our life. This is our childhood, especially where I grew up in the, you know, in East Oakland, and at a time where the murder rate was high. Like, you, death happens, you process it, and you gotta keep moving. Like, there's no prolonged grieving period. There's no therapy and counseling.
You just can't really afford it.
No. Yeah. You just, this happens, you move on. You lose the house, you move on, right? Like, that's, you lose a family member, you move on. Like, this is, maybe that's just how I'm made, but it's like, oh man, that's messed up. Y'all really leave? You go through it, like, all right, let's go. What's next? Because, I mean, maybe that's just how I was raised, but I was there. I never wear shoes of players I cover, ever. It's like a rule of mine. Matter of fact, I never wear shoes of players who are in the league. I only wear retired player shoes, right? If otherwise, I wear no player shoes, right? But, like, once Kobe retired, I was like, all right, I can wear Kobe's. Uh-huh. And I can always wear Jordan's, right? But I'm not putting on Kyrie's or LeBron's, right? But Steph Curry put out a pair of shoes, like, that literally said Oakland on the sole.
So, thank you, Oakland.
Yeah,
shoes.
I was like, yeah, I'm wearing those. I wore those to the last game of Oracle. But it was almost like drumming up all this stuff. I went to Beast Oakland and got me a hoodie. And I wore a Beast Oakland hoodie. And it was like, I mean, there was all this drum up for this great coronation. When you're there, it's like, yep, this is it. I mean, but it had been coming for so long that it really wasn't. I just didn't feel it. Maybe that's just me.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like for Oakland, it would have, the feelings would have been maybe more fulfilling overall. And there would have been a different feeling if they had won, if there had been another parade.
I think the way they went out was actually more fitting.
Yeah.
They didn't win, but it was probably the most, like, honorable and respectful way to go out other than winning.
Given everything that
happened. Yes. It was gritty. It was all heart. It was grind. They were so overmatched. They were so exhausted. They were heartbroken. And yet they were in that thing. Like, that was the most Oakland ending, you know what I'm saying, to Oracle, right? Because it needed to end in a loss if it was going to really represent Oracle, right?
Over the history of the 47 all those years.
Yeah. It's not, there's like, winning in a championship would have definitely been new money, right? Like, like, celebrate Oracle with, like, confetti and all that. Yeah, that's not how Oracle was supposed to go down. It was supposed to go down with a loss. But they went out with heart. Like, they went out, like, in a way that if you're from here, you respected it, right? Like, that for me was a little bit more, like, poetic than the confetti and all that. Like, I definitely felt that at the end. Like, okay, all right, way to represent. Like, that's how we do it. Yeah. We'll be right back.
That's Oakland's own Marcus Thompson speaking with KELW's Ben Trefney. Thompson recently wrote a biography of Kevin Durant called KD and a biography of Stephen Curry called Golden. And he's a senior writer for The Athletic. You can hear an extended version of that conversation in the final edition of the podcast Bounce, the Warriors' last season in Oakland. This is Cross Currents. I'm Hannah Baba. Next up, Audiograph, signature sounds of the Bay Area that tell the story of where you live and the people who live there with you.
How are we all doing tonight? You guys ready to see a fabulous show?
I'm 60, almost 60 friggin' 4 years old, and I'm still doing this because I love it.
So what is it and where? From our archives, reporter Hannah Kingsley Ma takes us there.
Okay, hold on. 13 is your first one?
Yes, and this one is my other one.
And one?
Yes, 13 and one.
Oh, this is right hand down right now.
One and one, 13 and one. I'll get yours in a minute, so.
That faint buzzing you hear, it's the sound of the beer-filled refrigerators lining the walls of a tiny fluorescent-lit storage area, which four drag queens are currently using as their dressing room.
I have a Cher medley.
That's Olivia Hart.
And I do Cher before liposuction, because I'm a little bit heavy.
Welcome to Aunt Charlie's Lounge, a tenderloin institution that's one of the oldest gay bars in San Francisco.
And we're real drag queens, honey. We're real drag queens.
Hi, I'm Joie de Vivre. I'm just a little Cajun queen.
Joie de Vivre has an old school glamour about her. Her blue sequin mini dress catches the light and sparkles, and she's dripping in fake diamonds. There's even a performer who goes on stage as a man, a rarity, he tells me, in the world of drag. His name is Bobby Ashton. He has a few tricks up his sleeve.
I do male numbers, and I cross over and do camp drag near the end of the evening.
And Bobby has more costumes than all of us. We bring suitcases, Bobby brings a U-Haul.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Aunt Charlie's Lounge. How are we all doing tonight? You guys ready to see a fabulous show?
Yes!
You guys want to see some lovely drag queens?
Yes! Performers strut down the length of the bar, fanning their faces, sitting on laps, occasionally extending a hand to gently brush the cheek of an audience member. As they sashay past, I am left in an afterwave of perfume and hairspray. Sometimes they are close enough that I can hear them whispering the lyrics to the songs as they theatrically lip sync.
Don't tell me mentally, just sit and candy and the of
Aunt Charlie's Lounge is part of a long legacy of queer spaces here in the Tenderloin. The neighborhood was a gathering place for LGBT people in the 1960s and 70s.
Aunt Charlie's is one of the last bars in the Tenderloin. There's Gangway, but Gangway's future is threatened.
That's James Hosking. He's not just a regular here. He's also the creator of Beautiful by Night, a documentary film and photo series about the performers at Aunt Charlie's. As luck would have it, I ended up sitting right at his table. He tells me even after the Castro overtook the Tenderloin as the city's gay mecca,
Aunt Charlie's kind of continued to exist and continued to be a place in which people could perform and have a community, and the bar could welcome transgender performers and drag performers and be inclusive in a way.
That inclusivity he's talking about, it was forged in a large way because of the late Vicky Merlane, also known as the woman with the liquid spine.
I'm doing a halfway strip tonight. Can you imagine this body stripping? If I didn't do it, I'd be dead.
That was her in a 2011 documentary. Marlene was one of the country's first transgender performers, and she headlined in Aunt Charlie's Lounge for decades.
The performers here continue the passion that she had for the show.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is a drag show, therefore, photography is absolutely mandatory. You ain't got no choice. It's a city ordinance. Okay, guys?
Drag's a visual medium. I, lowly radio reporter, cannot do the spectacle justice. It's just something you have to experience in person. But I can catalog the million different costume changes I saw in the span of one evening, just to give you a sense of how elaborate this production is. Leopard-patterned leotards, elegant ball gowns, red sequin jumpers, cat-eye glasses, a headpiece that looked like the lawful marriage between a Lucha Libre's closet and Liberace's, a gothic velvet dress with medieval sleeves, and some items of clothing too complicated or revealing in their construction for me even to attempt to describe. Bobby Ashton, the one with the U-Haul's worth of clothes, tells me this is a lot of work, and requires most of all, passion.
I don't think we make more than what we spend, you know, but that's the fun of it all. That's what we like to do.
He's been performing here for almost 20 years.
We're like the oldest queens here, okay? So a lot of people don't believe it when I say I'm 60, almost 60 friggin' 4 years old, and I'm still doing this because I love it.
Colette Le Ashton Grand, who founded this crew of drag queens back in 1997, is working tonight as a cocktail waitress. She butts in, her hands full of drinks.
You're old, though.
Yes.
She was asking me, girl, how long do I want to perform?
70 at the latest, okay? 70, I'm calling it quits.
That's kind of the most crucial thing about Aunt Charlie's. No one here is calling it quits. It's a pretty big deal, considering that it's one of the last remaining historic gay bars in the neighborhood. Gangway, the city's oldest gay bar half a mile away, just announced its closing after 50 years. That comes on the heels of the Lexington, San Francisco's last lesbian bar, and Esta Noche before that. Regulars like James Hosking don't want that to happen to Aunt Charlie's.
Being in Aunt Charlie's, you kind of feel the sense of history of the area. And so I worry that if the Tenderloin was radically changed and radically gentrified, we would lose that sense of what San Francisco was to people and the sense of what it could be to those who kind of came here seeking solace and an opportunity to perform and an opportunity to be who they were without compromise.
The drag queens here at Aunt Charlie's are determined to keep doing what they're doing. At this point, their performances are woven into the texture of this neighborhood, its history, its sense of place. Take it from Olivia Hart.
We're fabulous. We're gay. We're friendly. We're out there. Whatever you want to do, come to the Tenderloin and let's do it. Just don't hurt anybody.
For Cross Currents, I'm Hannah Kingsley Moth.
Thanks, Hannah. There's an ongoing series of exhibitions about Aunt Charlie's at the Tenderloin Museum going on through 2020, and the latest one opens tonight. Find out more information at kalw.org. That's also where you can subscribe to the Cross Currents newsletter, get all the interviews, all the events in your inbox every week. This music is by Laundry Night from San Francisco. They're performing at Bottom of the Hill this Saturday night.
Hold on.
solo.
Today's Cross Currents team includes Taylor Caldwell, Janae Darden, Audrey Dilling, Ariella Markowitz, Kristen McCandless, Truk Nguyen, Marissa Ortega Welch, M. Lock Swingin, and Eli Warchapter. Our engineers are James Rowlands, Tariq Foda, and Gabe Graben. Content manager is Shireen Adil. Deputy news director is Angela Johnston. News director is Ben Trefney. Our opening theme music is by the John Santos Quintet. For Cross Currents, I'm Hanat Baba.
Just another slow song.